all you Christians praying for rain to get rid of the drought, y'all are going to ruin Halloween. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The Eric Erickson Show. The phone number, well, the phone lines, I'll tell you when the phone lines are open. They're not open yet. They'll be open here in a minute. If you're listening, well, I mean, our show stretches in now to parts of Alabama and Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina. It's just, it's rain. If you're anywhere touching the state line of Georgia, you've got rain right now. Heavier rain headed into Rome here in the next little while. Clarksville, you're going to be getting a little more rain here. Athens as well. You've got a heavier band of showers coming in from Winder. Calhoun, Jasper, Dalton, you've got rain. If you're in South Georgia listening to the show right now, along the Florida line, you don't have any rain right now. Vidalia's clear. Douglas is clear. Maricus, Albany, y'all are all clear. Valdosta, you're clear. But you got more rain coming in here in a little bit. Within the next hour, but really heavy rain right now from LaGrange North, and it's sweeping across the state, and it's going to be a washed out Halloween. You keep Jody Heiss in your prayers, the congressman from outside of Athens. His father passed away last night. Keep him in your prayers, if you would. I want to talk about impeachment and whistleblower out of the gate. I think it's kind of an important thing, and the whistleblower has largely gone away. I think the whistleblower needs to testify in light of Vindman's testimony yesterday that there were things in the transcript. The transcript was not complete. Allegedly, he testified. And that was, I think, in his written statement that was leaked. He tried to get things added to the transcript that were not in there. The way the transcript works is it's not a stenographer like in court who types away on a keyboard. It is a group of people who listen in on the phone call. They gather all the notes and they put together the things that were said as best they can. It's not a transcription process. And Vindman claims that there was information left out, including the president more explicitly talking about Joe Biden, things like that. I think the whistleblower needs to testify. And there are a couple of reasons why I think the whistleblower needs to testify. First and foremost, it was the Democrats who originally told us the whistleblower was going to testify behind closed doors. The Democrats made a very big deal about the fact they were going to interview the whistleblower, and then they tried to claim that they couldn't interview the whistleblower because Republicans would undermine the process, and those icky Republicans would out the identity of the whistleblower. I don't think it was a coincidence, though, that they decided they would not interview the whistleblower after it came out that the whistleblower had met in advance with Adam Schiff and his staff, and they had referred the whistleblower to a particular reporter, and the whistleblower certainly didn't want to be asked under oath about all of that stuff. And how long did the whistleblower coordinate with Adam Schiff? If there's no there shouldn't be a problem. Ultimately, here's why I think the whistleblower needs to testify, and this sets me apart from some friends. There are some friends of mine who are very adamant that the whistleblower would be harassed. Listen, I know about harassment from people. I've had people show up at my front porch to threaten me and my family. And I get that, and I get that the whistleblower would have concerns. But those concerns should have been obvious when you blew the whistle as well. And I don't mean to downplay the situation or the concerns or the threats, but I got to tell you, we live in a highly divided nation. It is extremely divided. I read you the survey from Georgetown University, the Battleground Survey. That I'm so used to saying George Washington University, but it was Georgetown Survey, that the average American thinks we're 2/3 of the way to a civil war. And to a lot of Americans, they look at this and they say the Democrats have been after the president the entire time. They were after the president before he got sworn in. They tried to disrupt the Electoral College. They've tried to disrupt him the entire way. This is another example of another government bureaucrat trying to undermine the president of the United States, who was just trying to shift American foreign policy. And you can say that's wrong. You can say that's nonsense. You can say that there's no there. And that's fair. I don't believe the rhetoric of a coup. In fact, I don't think it's helpful. This is a constitutional process. But I also think it's disingenuous of Democrats to say, no, we weren't going to impeach the president. We were never going to impeach the president. No, we wouldn't have impeached the president without this. They've been trying the whole time. Remember, we're going to impeach the blankety blank from Rashida Tlaib. The Democrats were all upset. You gave away the game. You're not supposed to say that out loud. They've been after the guy since before he got sworn into office. They've been trying to undermine him the entire time. There have been a series of leaks to undermine him. I think the whistleblower needs to testify. I think the whistleblower needs to testify because we know that the whistleblower worked with Joe Biden. We know that the whistleblower had partisan motivations in part for blowing the whistle. I think we need to hear in public from the whistleblower. They're going to take this process from outside the shadows. They're going to let the American public hear from the witnesses. They're going to ask the probing questions they think they need to ask in public. We should hear from the whistleblower. The Democrats now say that, well, we're hearing from the people who told the whistleblower stuff. We should hear from the firsthand sources. But the inspector general said that the whistleblower's report wasn't just based on secondhand stuff, but firsthand stuff as well. What firsthand stuff? Why do we hear from all of these people who have firsthand information, but we don't hear from the whistleblower who has firsthand information? Because the inspector general's statement pushing back on the form, remember some people said the form had been changed to accommodate the whistleblower? The inspector general said, yes, the whistleblower based their whistleblowing complaint on secondhand information, but also had firsthand information. So what firsthand information? Why do we hear from these people who have firsthand information and not from that person? You're going to allow people to concoct conspiracy theories about the deep state and everyone else, and some of them are looking legit. You got the New York Times now saying, hey, yeah, there is a deep state, and God bless them. You're going to allow people to make the claims of coup. You're going to allow people to make claims of deep state. You're going to allow people to make claims of embedded third parties trying to undermine this president unless everybody comes out of the shadows, including the whistleblower. You wanted the transcript release. You got the transcript release. You want the process public. They're going to make the process public, make the whistleblower public. I suspect they're not making the whistleblower public, not because of harassment fears. I suspect they're not making the whistleblower public because if the whistleblower were to become public, it would undermine the process because we would say either this is someone who was passed over for promotion by the president and so angry about it, or this is a person who really is a partisan, who is known to be a partisan within the government. And that person would undermine the credibility of the impeachment investigation. So make the whistleblower public. Let's see what actually happens. Interestingly enough, it looks like the Republicans are trying to figure out who the whistleblower is. And I think this goes to the fact, you know, the spin in the media right now is that the reason the Republicans want to know who the whistleblower is because the Republicans want to cause that person harm or have people attack the whistleblower or have the whistleblower threatened. No, I think there is a growing sense that if people knew who the whistleblower was, we would realize this was a partisan process from the get-go, and this was a partisan setup by a whistleblower who was nursing partisan grievances against the president. It would give the Republicans ammunition to undermine it. Now, listen, I'm deeply troubled by what we know so far from Bill Taylor and from Vindman, the guy who testified yesterday. There do appear to be concerns that the president was dragged into this by Rudy Giuliani and Ambassador Sondland, both of whom are getting the president impeached because they're incompetent. The president does appear, based on what we know, to have had partisan motivations related to 2020 for asking about Joe Biden. If he actually did, if he held up money because of it, I think that probably is impeachable. I think there's an argument to be made that let's just let the voters decide. We'll be closer to an election than anything else, so let the voters decide. If the Democrats want to pass their impeachment resolution, go for it, but let the voters decide, not the Senate. We're that close to the election. There's an argument Republicans can make on that front. But it is concerning. I don't want, let's say Nikki Haley runs in 2024. Let's say Elizabeth Warren, worst case scenario, Elizabeth Warren gets elected. Nikki Haley runs against her. I do not want Elizabeth Warren to think she is justified in having any foreign government or domestic agency investigating Nikki Haley as a political opponent. So I don't think this president should do it to Joe Biden. I think it's a dangerous precedent. You can say, well, Barack Obama did it with the Russians against Donald Trump. I think that Donald Trump should investigate how the Russian stuff started. I think the Steele dossier, investigating that, is fair game. We should find out if Democrats did to Donald Trump what they now say Donald Trump is doing to Joe Joe Biden. That is perfectly fair game. And to the extent that the Democrats are howling about it, it is partisan. They should want to know as well, but they don't. And that's why we should investigate it. In the same way, we should know who the whistleblower is. And I think this is why the Republicans are pushing this. Here's Steve Scalise on the impeachment inquiry from yesterday.
It's clear Pelosi needs to declare a mistrial. This has been a tainted process from the start. What happened today confirms even worse just how poorly Adam Schiff is handling this process and denying the ability for Republicans to even ask basic questions that are critical to the heart of whether or not a president of the United States is impeached. This is, by the way, something that Hamilton himself warned against when he was writing in the Federalist Papers, expressing concerns about how Congress would handle impeachment. This is exactly what he talked about. This stinks to high heaven. This shouldn't be allowed, not in the United States of America.
Yeah, they're not letting the Republicans ask all of the questions they want to ask of the witnesses, particularly Veneman yesterday. And I suspect what they were trying to find out was who exactly the whistleblower is. And I think it's a relevant question. I do. I think Republicans have a right to know. I think it sets parameters for how this began. Oddly enough, Tom Brokaw, of all people, was talking to Andre Mitchell on MSNBC. Listen to this.
The big difference is, however, Andrea, that they still don't have what you would call...
The big difference, let me start this over. I didn't set it up properly. I apologize. The big difference between Watergate with Richard Nixon and this.
The big difference is, however, Andrea, that they still don't have what you would call the goods on this president in terms of breaking the law and being in an impeachable target for them. They're going to start the process, but they don't have the same kind of clarity that the people who are opposed to Richard Nixon had, because it was so clear that these were criminal acts that he was involved in.
And that's a big difference here. It's not a criminal, it's an abusive act if the president got a foreign power to investigate Joe Biden for 2020. It's an abusive act. It's an abuse of power. The first article of impeachment against Richard Nixon was an abuse of power issue. But it's not necessarily criminal. And even the abuse of power issues with Richard Nixon involve criminality. We need to know who the whistleblower is and what their motivation was, particularly because of the inspector general himself saying there was a partisan issue involved. We need to hear from the whistleblower because we know the whistleblower went to Adam Schiff first. Why did he go to Adam Schiff first? Why did she go to Adam Schiff first? We don't know who the person is. We need to know these things. I think these are relevant issues. I absolutely think they're relevant. I think that if they're going to make this process as transparent as possible, the issue that got the ball rolling was a whistleblower going to Adam Schiff, giving Adam Schiff time to coordinate behind closed doors to build the case to impeach the president. We need to know just how much coordination there was. We do not need to hear from Adam Schiff on that. We need to hear from the whistleblower under oath what that is. And I understand why Democrats are concerned. I understand they think that Republicans will be able to say, well, this is partisan. This is partisan. So it is partisan. It is political. All of it is. And we should see just how political the whistleblower is. We need to hear from the whistleblower. The phone lines are open. 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425.
Well connected and well respected. It's Eric Erickson, live every weekday.
Well, related to impeachment, let me this headline from Politico. Democrats' internal squabbles overshadow damning testimony. The subtitle, they grumbled about a vote on an impeachment resolution, even as a key witness delivered a major boost to their inquiry. This is hilarious. House Democrats spent Tuesday consumed by intra-party grumbling over a resolution that ends up making limited changes to their impeachment inquiry, a needless distraction for Democrats just as they collect some of the most explosive testimony to date against President Donald Trump. House investigators heard damning testimony from a National Security Council official who is providing the first direct account of Trump's July phone call with Ukraine's president. the kind of evidence the Democrats have long sought as they weighed impeachment. But much of the day was instead dedicated to internal squabbling and turf battles over the language of an impeachment resolution that outlines the process for which Democrats take their inquiry public in the coming weeks. And Democrats, from leadership down, struggled to explain just what the resolution accomplished and why it's needed now. I didn't know there was really it was really necessary at this point, said Representative Jeff Van Drew, one of the caucus's few impeachment skeptics, who says he's leaning no. Let's put it this way. Republicans very much want it. So if they very much want it, it would mean they just want to help us a whole lot and really think it's a good idea, or they think it's good to put us in a tight spot. Anthony Brindisi, another swing district Democrat, also hasn't publicly backed the inquiry. He said he questions the timing. Most moderates are expected to vote for the resolution, including some freshman members who've long resisted it, like Joe Cunningham, not my buddy from Louisiana, but a Democrat from South Carolina. Top Democrats had not intended for a simple procedural measure to take up oxygen for multiple days, stretching from Monday's initial announcement through the vote on Thursday. But the impeachment session on Capitol Hill ended up turning the resolution into a glaring example of the Democrats' messaging struggles on impeachment. The rollout of the resolution caused angst among Democratic moderates, many of whom have fixated over the impeachment probe process because they see it as the only remaining aspect they can control, as the caucus seems headed to an eventual vote to impeach the president. This is actually kind of funny. The resolution is less about imbuing impeachment investigators with new power than about directing traffic at multiple committees jockeying for jurisdiction over the high-stakes probe. It lays out how the House Intelligence Panel decides which hearings to hold. It allows Schiff to add rounds of uninterrupted questioning for himself and Devin Nunes, up to 45 minutes per side, as many times as necessary. Schiff and Nunes may yield their question times to staffers. There's a slight change from existing House rules, which permit committee chairs to add a single round of staff questioning at 30 minutes per side. The resolution spells out Republicans may request to call witnesses and issue subpoenas. In both cases, the requests are subject to a veto by Schiff and committee Democrats. The resolution preserves the authority of House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler. It affords Trump and his legal team a chance to mount a defense and cross-examine witnesses. Those powers will all be subject to Nadler's discretion. Those details, specifically for judiciary, were outlined in a separate document. Top Democrats have sought to clarify this week that the vote does not authorize the impeachment inquiry, which is already underway. Several Democrats privately feared the rollout of the resolution unintentionally overshadowed Alexander Vindman's testimony. These people are stepping all over themselves. This story in Politico out this morning. Democrats all upset about this. The reason they're upset about it, you need to understand, is because Nancy Pelosi just came out. They had a bunch of oversight committees investigating the president. And then suddenly Nancy Pelosi jumps out and says, you know what? This is now an impeachment inquiry. In the past, what has happened is they have more thoughtfully plotted this forward. But the Democrats, for the longest time, wanted to deny they were actually impeaching the president until they found something. They found the whistleblower complaint. And then suddenly Nancy Pelosi comes out after the whistleblower, goes to Schiff, talks to Schiff. Suddenly Nancy Pelosi says, hey, you know all that committee oversight stuff? This is actually now an impeachment inquiry. It's because they've wanted to impeach the president the entire time. And in wanting to impeach the president the entire time, they had to come up with something. But now they're stepping all over themselves. You know, this puts people like Lucy McBath here in Georgia in an interesting position. McBath voted for the House Judiciary Committee to change the way it was operating to supposedly begin impeachment inquiries against the president. She voted essentially for committee procedures. As Doug Collins, he was on this program, said, Doug Collins pointed out, this was just like an Instagram filter. They just changed the colorations of what they were already doing. Lucy McBath voted for that. Lucy McBath has not had to vote on the floor of the House of Representatives for or against impeachment. In fact, the polling in the 6th Congressional District here in Georgia overwhelmingly opposes impeachment. the voters in the 6th Congressional District here in Georgia, that's the district that Karen Handel lost to Lucy McBath. She's trying to get it back. There are two other people in the race with her, trying to get it from Lucy McBath. The polls show that voters in that district do not support in any way, shape, or form impeachment. So how is McBath going to vote? You know, here's the darn thing about this. You very well may see a situation where more Democrats vote against impeachment than Republicans vote for it, in which case the Republicans will legitimately be able to say there's bipartisan opposition to impeaching the president right now. And the media, I'm sure, will try to cover for the Democrats, but the vote will speak for itself on this issue, and it looks like that's going to happen right now. Yes, I highly do recommend you text recipe to 33777. Why? Because I am going to start sending out recipes for the holiday season. In fact, I've got one going out tomorrow. Just as an aside, before we get into anything else, have you heard about this? Here's the headline. A German restaurant has mistakenly served cannabis at a funeral. It was in a cake. A widow and other mourners were taken to the hospital after being drugged from accidentally eating a hash cake. Police said the daughter of one of the restaurant workers made the cake for a different occasion. This is Rostock in Germany. According to authorities, a group of mourners had just attended a burial gathering at a restaurant to have coffee and cake, a German afternoon tradition. But after chowing down on the cake, 13 of the mourners suddenly started reporting feeling dizzy and nauseous. According to authorities, one woman had to be taken via ambulance to the hospital, while the other sought medical treatment. They then later reported the case to the police and pressed charges. The incident at the funeral took place in August. Police waited to report on it out of respect for the mourners. It turns out that the 18-year-old daughter of the store of the restaurant owner had made the cake. She made the cake for the funeral, but she made a separate cake with marijuana in it and planned to consume it herself. The restaurant employee took the hash cake to the funeral and didn't discuss it first with the daughter, and the daughter is now under investigation for violating German. Wow! So apparently they had too much of the cake and started feeling really bad. They thought they had been food poisoned. Oh, dear. I'm sorry, you shouldn't. Okay. The Washington Post. Let us discuss here for a moment the Washington Post. The Washington Post has an op-ed. The Washington Post masthead now says democracy dies in the darkness. They waited until Donald Trump decided to become president or to run for president. He got elected president, and suddenly it's. You got to say democracy dies in the dark. They didn't have this during the Obama administration, when the Obama administration was issuing subpoenas, rounding up and locking up reporters, trying to find out who was leaking. They didn't do this during the Bush administration. They waited for Donald Trump, and suddenly, oh, we got to go back to democracy dies in the darkness. Oh, and the newspaper that did this is running an op-ed by a former Obama State Department assistant secretary that we need restrictions on free speech. And why do we need restrictions on free speech? Because, well, Muslims and how they reacted when people did things like burning the Quran, and we just can't have stuff like that, and that's bad. It really is absurd to me that we're here, and yet we are. The entire idea that somehow or another we've got to restrict people's free speech because people in the Muslim world may react violently to a preacher here burning the Quran or some such. It's not our fault. And also, of course, you could go after Donald Trump. You could surely go after Donald Trump if you did that. This is absurd. But it actually is to be expected that we're here, that somehow or another we should be curtailing people's speech in this country that we don't like. And what is amazing to me, actually, is that it is the Washington Post that is running this. The Washington Post, of all things, deciding that we've got too much free speech in this country, that somehow or another we could go after the president if we restricted it. Somehow or another we could in some ways stop the Middle East from rioting every time someone in this country speaks. Richard Stengel, he's a former editor of Time, worked at the State Department. By the way, do you notice this? Richard Stengel, he was an editor of Time. And then he went to work for Barack Obama, yet another Time magazine person who went to work for Obama, Jay Carney as well. When I was a journalist, I loved Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr.'s assertion that the Constitution and the First Amendment are not just about protecting free thought for those who agree with us, but freedom for the thought that we hate. But as a government official traveling around the world, championing the virtues of free speech, I came to see how our First Amendment standard is an outlier. Even the most sophisticated Arab diplomats that I dealt with did not understand why the First Amendment allows someone to burn a Quran. Why, they asked me, why would you ever want to protect burning the Quran? It's a fair question. Burn the Bible, sure, but the Quran, you know he thinks it. Yes, the First Amendment protects the thought that we hate, but it should not protect hateful speech that can cause violence by one group against another. Wait a second. We're to change our First Amendment because people in other parts of the world don't like it. This comes on the heels of the NBA kowtowing to China on free speech issues. Richard Stengel thinks that we need, and you know, this comes on the heels of polling that shows that millennials want to ban hate speech. Here's the funny thing. It's important to remember that our First Amendment doesn't just protect the good guys. Our foremost liberty also protects any bad actors who hide behind it to weaken our society. Now, wait a second. Who are the bad guys? In this case, he points to the Russians. But it could just as easily be the Christians. And what about the we should get rid of the First Amendment because we should not protect hate speech that can cause violence by one group against another? So essentially, if someone reacts violently to someone's speech, then that speech should not be protected. So if a bunch of Christians go out because a Muslim says Jesus isn't the only begotten Son of God, and a bunch of Christians riot and begin burning places down, would Richard Stengel decide that you can't say that, that the Muslim's got to be censored of his religion? This is the problem here, is it allows the elite to pick winners and losers. That's the genius of the First Amendment, is everybody has the right. You know, this is increasingly a pervasive attitude I find when it comes to the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and the like, is that the elite should be in charge of doling out how much of a right we can have. See, it's perfectly fine for the elite to have a Second Amendment. It's the Hicks and Rubes out there who won't use it responsibly, so we should curtail it for them. And the elite don't really need it because they can hire people to protect them. And the First Amendment, the Hicks and Rubes don't need that because they may say something offensive. They may say something like, men can't become women. Get her! Or they may say something like, we don't believe that Muhammad is a prophet of God, and cause a riot. Or they may burn a Bible. They can watch pornography. They just can't question Islam. I mean, that's essentially what this guy is doing. Now, what's interesting here is that this was an Obama administration official who's come forward at a time more and more polling is showing that on college campuses, students and increasingly academics want this as well. This is not a fringe opinion. The Washington Post does not publish fringe opinions. This is an opinion prevailing among the elite. And who are they targeting in particular? In this case, he's hiding behind the Russians. But it's not just the Russians. I mean, his very first example is Muslims rioting, the fact that the Muslims don't understand in foreign countries why we have a freedom of speech. You know who also doesn't understand the First Amendment? The communist Chinese. They don't like our First Amendment either. They don't like it. And so he wants hate speech laws. Hate speech has a less violent but nearly as damaging impact. It diminishes tolerance. It enables discrimination. Isn't that, by definition, speech that undermines the value of the First Amendment? The First Amendment was designed to protect fairness, due process, equality before the law. No. The First Amendment was designed to protect speech. Why shouldn't the states experiment with their own versions of hate speech statutes to penalize speech that insults people based on religion, race, ethnicity, or sexual orientation? Not all speech is equal. All speech is not equal. We see how this plays out in European countries where a pastor quotes from scripture that homosexuality is a sin. He gets carted away to jail. This is more dangerous than someone saying something you're offended by. You know what? When you hear speech that offends you, it's your choice whether to react or not. But to react in such a way as to say that that person shouldn't be able to speak again is an amazing admission that this guy wants to censor people he disagrees with. I'm a Christian. I believe that the only way to go to heaven is to place your faith in Jesus Christ. I believe that Christianity is the only true religion, that because God is interwoven in society and God has woven himself into nature, other religions certainly reflect God in certain ways. Other religions have certain truths because they mirror in some way God. They're twisted and distorted. But you can see God in all of creation. And if you can see God in all of creation, you can certainly see God in some way in the ideas of God in other religions. For example, every religion has a version of the golden rule. Don't do to people what you don't want them to do to you. Except it was Jesus in Christianity who made straight the twisted path. Instead of reflecting God, it actually showed God. See, the reflection of God, like your reflection in the mirror, is the reverse of you. So the other religions, they reflect in some way God, but oftentimes it's an opposite. So every religion on the planet has some version of don't do to people what you don't want them to do to you. And Christ comes along and says, no, that's not it. It's actually do to people what you want them to do to you. You affirmatively act in a way that you want other people to affirmatively act. You don't just refrain from acting. Every religion has a concept of mercy. Every religion has a concept of mercy, that God will show mercy on you and it will prevent you from being destroyed, burning in hellfire, doing something, sparing you from the things that you deserve. But Christianity has a concept of grace. Christianity makes straight the twisted paths of the other religions. The others reflect God with this idea of mercy, but they don't really show God in proper terms, and Jesus does. Where other religions have this concept of mercy, Christianity has this concept of grace. That it's not just that God spares us from the things we deserve, he gives us the things we don't deserve. Am I to go to jail or be punished for saying that? Am I to go to jail for speaking what I believe to be true, that other religions aren't authentic, that other religions aren't real, that other religions don't have a path to salvation, that you actually have to put your faith in Jesus Christ? And yes, there are things that are sin. The Bible says are sin: homosexuality, adultery, drunkenness, they're all sins. Am I not allowed to say that? Am I not allowed to quote scripture about God making male and female, and we can't make male and female because God made male and female? Because that's what this guy suggests. Why shouldn't states experiment with their own version of hate speech statutes that penalize speech that directly insults people based on religion, race, ethnicity, and sexual orientation? Deliberately insults. That's the word. Deliberately insults people. Well, what's a deliberate insult? If I'm speaking in general phrases and say that I believe Christianity is the only path to salvation, that's not a deliberate insult. But if I say you don't believe in Jesus, so you're going to hell, that's a deliberate insult. So I get to go to jail for saying that, but it's a true statement according to my faith. Why should an elite be allowed to regulate my speech? For that matter, the Second Amendment, or any other right that you have. And that's what the left wants here. What's so interesting here is there aren't a lot of people on the left or in the media that are really pushing back on this. Now, there are some, there certainly are some, and you know, there will be people in the media say, wait, this guy pushed back on it. How can you say no one pushed back on it? Well, the one kind of is the exception that proves the rule. It's very much like the Beto O'Rourke going after tax-exempt status for churches. There aren't a lot of people in the media pushing back against it, and there aren't a lot of Democratic candidates pushing back against it, because you could tell he kind of captures exactly what they're talking about. He kind of captures it. There's a story in Wired we'll get to in a little while about transgender athletes. And essentially what the story acknowledges is that, yeah, having men compete against women, even men who've transitioned, is unfair, and they have an inherent advantage. And you know what their acknowledgement is that it's unfair, but then two, that it's okay that it's unfair. It's okay that it's unfair. Life is unfair. They're finally acknowledging at least that having men compete against women in women's sports is unfair. And you know what their solution is? An algorithm. Yes, we should have an algorithm that includes socioeconomic discrepancies to decide who wins. It can't be first past the post in the race. We got to decide, this person's too white with too much privilege. We got to give the award to someone else. This is an actual argument being made in a magazine that purports to be about science and technology. The algorithms will decide everything as we descend closer and closer to a civil war, I guess. Absolutely serious. Okay. This hurts my head. But I think a key takeaway here is that we have a group of elites who are pushing this idea, and it is extremely notable, and you should pay attention to the fact that there are not a ton of people in the media pushing back against these ideas. And it's not because they think they're fringe and it's not worth doing. It's because a lot of them agree, and that tells you where we're headed.
Eric Erickson gives you the information you need and the truth you demand.
Hello there. The phone number, 877-973-7425, 877-97-ERIC. Yes, 877-973-7425. Democrats, well, they kind of want a 42% sales tax. Yeah, 42% sales tax. Now, that doesn't actually necessarily... It's not necessarily something the Democrats say on the campaign trail they want, but the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget has done voters. This is from Yahoo Finance. The Committee for Responsible Federal Budget has done voters a favor by spelling out what kinds of new taxes it would take to come up with the money needed to pay for Medicare for All. Medicaid for All is what it would amount to. Warren justifies many of her programs by saying it would take just 2 cents for the wealthy. That's a reference to her 2% wealth tax on ultra-millionaires. But Medicare for All would be so expensive if you tax top earners at 100%. If you took all the income of couples earning more than $408,000 per year, you would fall short. And everyone getting taxed at 100% would obviously stop working. So it won't work. Well, the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget has outlined a variety of options, including a 42% national sales tax. It would generate $3 trillion in revenue. But it would destroy consumer spending. A tax of that magnitude would be like 42% inflation, wrecking consumer budgets and the many companies that depend on them, from Walmart to Amazon. What would this do just in real-world effects? You add 42% to a dollar, you go up to $1.42. Add 42% to a $10 purchase, you're going up $4.20. So your $10 purchase becomes $14.20. You would be wrecking the economy by doing this. The other option, by the way, is a 32% payroll tax split between employers and workers, or a 25% income surtax on everybody. Or the government could cut 80% of spending on everything but healthcare. That includes highways, airports, and the Pentagon. or borrow the money and quadruple the Washington annual debt. By the way, I got to say, I'm still appalled that Republicans who are supposedly concerned about the size and scope of Washington, we're at new records for the national debt and deficit. Whatever happened to the party of small government? It can't just be the party of small government when Democrats are in charge. It's got to be the party of small government, and they're not. And they are helping. Republicans are helping bankrupt this nation. And who is going to hold them to account? Will it be the voters? I have a hard time imagining the voters are actually going to move to the Democrats on the issue of spending and the debt, when the Democratic proposal essentially would require a 42% increase in the sales tax in this country. But I think they're losing hope on Republicans. Who is going to be fiscally responsible enough to deal with this problem? You know, my buddy Chip Roy, Congressman, maybe I should get him on the show at some point. His proposed solution is we freeze spending. Just freeze spending in the federal budget at 2019 levels. And with the growth in the economy that we're seeing, we will get to a balanced budget. We will increase enough money in federal reserve, in federal dollars coming into the Treasury, that we will at least be able to curtail the national debt. But no one wants to do that. Everyone in Washington wants to keep spending and drive up spending and drive it up further and further. And at some point, the chickens are going to come home to roost, to quote Jeremiah Wright. The chickens will come home to roost. He's right on this issue. And nobody wants to talk about it. And here come Democrats now wanting a massive new government entitlement that would bankrupt the nation. And you know who the big winner is in that? China. To say it as Donald Trump says it, China. China would win. China. China would. They would dominate if we did something like this. This is a bad idea. We need to reconsider it.